move on to the next case for this morning, Ellis and Price and others against DHL Express. Mr. Winston.
May it please the Court, Lee Winston for John Ellis and Tim Price. We believe the District Court committed error in this case when it adopted DHL's designation of employment departures as voluntary.
But let me just make sure we all understand one thing. The District Court never reached your motion for class certification, correct?
That's correct.
So the only people involved in the case are your two named plaintiffs, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So just nail that down. As for the other point, which I think you rightly are emphasizing, don't the regulations under the Warren Act make pretty clear that companies are entitled to try to induce people to leave, even though those inducements may be against the backdrop of fairly dramatic changes in the business?
We agree that the companies are entitled to offer resignation programs in conjunction with the Warren Act notice. DHL.
Even before we know that there's a need for a Warren Act notice, isn't it the case that if a company wants to shrink, it can try voluntary shrinkage? It can say, you know, we'll give you 10 weeks severance with the following packages, or for that matter, 4 weeks. And if enough people leave, then they may not trigger the Warren Act at all.
I would agree that companies can offer that type of package. But this and what's omitted from the district court's opinion and any discussion of, it was done against the backdrop of, we're having cuts tomorrow. We know that we've said this cut's coming, and everybody knows it's this difficult times. But in this case, in this situation, they said, we're having a new job bid, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to lose, you can see how many people we need, and we're losing 300 jobs now. So it's not just that the employees had 1 or 2 days to decide. It's not just a temporal problem. It's a substantive problem that the job cuts are now. They're not in 60 days.
Well,
or they're not in, you know.
But it hasn't happened. Now, there were some people, right, who chose not to accept.
That's correct.
These offers, and there were a few people who accepted and then thought better of it and revoked.
That's
right?
Correct.
So describe to me their status.
Well, if you take my client's status, John Ellis, laid off November 7th, he was laid off with no benefits, no notice.
But wasn't he still on a recall list?
For the next 3 years, he will be.
Right. So he, in a sense, I mean, it's like any other laid off employee. The business might start growing again as an international freight business. Nobody really had foresight 3 years ahead to know whether by choosing not to accept this voluntary package, Mr. Ellis might have come back at some point.
That's correct. He theoretically could still be offered his job back.
Even though they knew, I mean, you're focusing very much on this new job bid where there are only going to be whatever it was, 325 positions, or
it was going to be about 288 according to the bid sheet that we saved. And
but then they might have started growing again.
Absolutely, they could decide they want to get back into it. They had canceled their domestic service; they could get back into it.
Right, and so Mr. Ellis was on the 3-year recall.
That's correct.
And the people who took the voluntary resignation were not.
That's correct.
So, do you think that's a meaningless benefit, or do you think?
Well, I think I don't think it's a meaningless benefit, but I don't think it directly addresses the statute, which says after they shrink their employment, if they had employment of 800 or 900 and they shrink it down to 200, whether Mr. Ellis was entitled to notice, as all the managers received, they all received 60 days notice.
But the problem that I have throughout your brief is that the time, in a sense, it's the calculation of the denominator. You know, how many employees existed on day one, how many employees were there going to be on day 60, you know, was the shrinkage enough to meet the statute? And I've played a lot with these numbers, and I'm particularly, if we find that these resignations are voluntary, I don't think that there's any way you can come up with the numbers.
If all the resignations are voluntary, you're correct.
Uh-huh.
And you're correct. I cannot. But there,
so I guess under the statute, I mean, I was left with the feeling that your real complaint is that the WARN Act is just not as muscular a statute as you wish it were, and there's not too much we can do about that.
People have written to that issue, and I think there's, you know, some people made proposals to strengthen the WARN Act, but I want to deal with the statute as it exists today. Yeah. And as it exists today, and the regulation talks about this, is the question is whether or not these employees are pressured to, whether you calculate, and I agree, if you take their calculation, there is no violation. But if you put, if you change the designation on the voluntary departures, then they did cross the thresholds.
See, I mean, there are plenty of cases that say economic pressure is part of the game. I mean, it's just part of that. And in many of these situations where an employer decides to try to extend a carrot or so, you know, an immediate payment now as opposed to maybe something after years of litigation, there's a lot of economic pressure. Employees usually have heard that the company's going to be shrinking. I don't know what makes your case different from all the other cases where economic pressure exists in the background.
Well, in the Long versus Dunlap case, and we cite there in their brief, and I think they made me mind too, that in Long versus Dunlap, where there's a case from Louisiana, how the employees do leave when presented with a notice. And I think in that case, they don't. They're true voluntary departures. But in this case, when the employer says, we're cutting jobs today, not at the end of the expiration, we know we've issued a WARN notice, but we're not going to wait till the end of that period. We're going to cut the jobs now. And under those circumstances, we don't think the departure should be classified as voluntary.
But you have to have the period of time, and the district court was very careful to go back and calculate all sorts of different periods of time, one starting in June and moving forward the 60 days, and others starting at different times. And, you know, I would say this company was probably trying to structure its shrinkage with the WARN Act in the background, but that's okay.
I think it is okay, but once they push the job cut, they give the employees notice, and if the employees would have left or signed up for this program once they had the notice, fine.
But the effective date of this new bid would have been 60 days after the notice they gave anyway.
The effective date of the new job bid was December 15th.
Yeah, but when were they going to – when were the new job – that's the bid.
Yeah.
That's not the jobs.
Well, the jobs were going to be – the plaintiffs, and we submitted a number of declarations. The job bid was effective, and you can look at it. I think it's Exhibit 9 in my appendix. The job bid was effective December 15th. Now, they did leave some people on the payroll till they actually didn't lay them off for another week and then 2 weeks after that. But the employees were all let go prior to the expiration of the WARN Act period.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on, you know, which dates you use to calculate this.
I would use the date that's in the appendix. December 15th is the effective date of the job bid.
No, but at one point you make an argument about how we have to roll this forward, and if you roll it, then I'm not sure there's ever a period of time during which you meet the statutory numbers.
Well,
because the denominator is always shrinking.
That's correct, Your Honor. I do address one point. If you take the numbers their way, if you say we're going to qualify, we're going to say yes, everybody's voluntary, there is a period of December 24th, moving forward 90 days, where it does bump above the 33%, but that's contingent on again the denominator and whether you use the 90 days of employment or you use the starting number, the denominator, you make it 60 days prior to that, which we think is inconsistent.
Well, but let me back up again for another issue that floats around this case. One of them is what's the business unit? Is it the six different locations, or is it one unified unit? And the other is which branch of the WARN Act you're going under, the mass layoff branch. I would think it would be the mass layoff branch, but the plant closing branch is another possibility.
Speaking to the individual locations, at summary judgment, in terms of the mass layoff, the district court only analysis was for one was for Chicago citywide.
And that was because, for the sake of the argument, right, DHL was saying, you know, we'll do it that way because we don't think you meet the numbers even then.
Yeah. And so, but that was what the summary judgment was based on. And when I asked for let's look at it individually, they said it's not even necessary because we've assumed for the purposes of the argument on the layoff claim that it's one location.
Now, what kind of discovery were you looking for on the individual locations? Because I don't see you complaining before us anything about a 56F motion.
I didn't file an appeal on the 56F issue. But the discovery we were looking for were the individual location totals of the layoffs, because once the district court, we thought, said it's separate sites of employment, it seemed to us inappropriate. Well, we needed to have the evidence about the six separate sites, because there were six locations, and at one of those locations in the motion to reconsider, the Lyle location, DPA Lyle, it showed that there were 50 layoffs prior to the implementation of the voluntary severance, but I don't know whether that was 33% or not.
Mm-hmm.
What were you looking for with respect to Deutsche Post?
The statute allows for the parents are considered part of the subsidiaries, and they were named defendant because at the time we didn't know if DHL was still going to exist when we filed the case. We were going to pursue the case against them as well.
But what did Deutsche Post do that DHL didn't do?
Deutsche Post made the same actor. I mean, Deutsche Post made, it's my understanding they made the decision to have the shutdown and to get out of the business. But and there was pending on a motion to dismiss when the judge combined the two. And
a few minutes ago, you said that if all of the voluntary departures were voluntary, then you don't meet the numbers.
If every departure that they haven't agreed that they have a release for, I would agree with that. We don't. That they got releases for 4 weeks.
Yeah, and they had a couple of different programs. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Two different programs. But aren't they all or nothing? Aren't they either all voluntary or all involuntary?
No, Your Honor. I think there's a distinction that really should be looked at is for the 4 week people, DHL came to them after they'd already been laid off and said, can we get a resignation from you? Now, these people can't be considered voluntary departures. I mean, they're already gone.
But they're not if they have recall rights. They're in this
position.
And so what DHL is doing when it goes to them with this four-week program is it's getting some kind of closure. They don't want them hanging off there in the recall list.
Yeah, but for the purpose of the statute, though, these people are laid off. So I don't see how you can consider them voluntary departures because the statute says if you lay off.
Well, but here you're kind of conflating who was laid off and who has a release and who might sue under any number of statutes, the Age Discrimination Act, the WARN Act, anything else. It was a pretty comprehensive release, I thought.
Yeah, well, the federal regulation, it says that it's going to use existing laws to determine whether these releases are knowing or involuntary.
But you're trying to import the age discrimination standard, and I don't think anybody's ever done that.
Yeah, the only reason is the age discrimination standard is referenced is it's specifically addressed in the federal regulations. It says when you're trying to figure out whether these employees are voluntary departures or not, we look to Title VII, the ADEA. I didn't come up with it. It's in the regulations.
The regulations and the NLRA also say we're not going to punish companies if they issue just a prophylactic WARN notice. We are going to encourage people, if they want to roll the dice and see if they can get enough voluntary resignations, they might avoid WARN Act being triggered altogether. And there are a lot of things in the regulations that encourage exactly what DHL did.
And the only thing I don't think the regulations provide for is when they talk about pressure, and we had a declaration from, we think it's a disputed fact, that when you're instructed your bid, you're losing your job now, that's a form of pressure.
Oh, I'm sure it's horrible. I mean, I don't disagree with you at all that it puts somebody in a terrible position, but if the statute takes an approach that if you nonetheless say, well, I'm making a judgment for myself and my family or whoever you're making a judgment for, that it's better to take the bird in the hand than to hang on here, that's considered a voluntary decision. It's a tough decision, but tough doesn't mean involuntary.
Okay. Yeah. So, but and our other position is that they shouldn't have been that they shouldn't be allowed to get secure the WARN waivers, and the district court notes that the employees, in order to obtain any benefits at all, were required to waive their WARN notice for 4 weeks of pay. It's our position that shouldn't that's inconsistent with the purpose of the statute.
Well, if you'd like to save a little time for rebuttal, that would be fine. Mr. Lapp?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Rich Lapp and Josh Dettelberg on behalf of Apple DHL Express. To start, I think, and end, we would take the position, do take the position, that the resignations were voluntary and that should end the matter without exploring the various scenarios that counsel has taken us through in the brief. Missing from both counsel's brief and his argument today is an enormous contextual fact, and that is the role of the plaintiff's union or the appellant's union in this matter. This is not a case when we're speaking about duress and the pressure, and I agree that the scenario is tough to be faced with, the prospect of losing one's job.
In December, around Christmas time, is it your position that there's simply no way that a company could present a proposed resignation package, I'll say, that would that might not be a form of duress?
In this case, there wasn't. And in this case, what happened was starting...
You didn't sign off on duress. I mean, I don't know. You place a lot of weight on the fact that the union was involved, and I'm not sure why that's relevant.
Well, I think it's relevant because the plaintiffs, throughout the period from the minute the announcement occurred, had the benefit of their statutory representative negotiating with the company over the release package. This was not a case where an individual was approached by a company on 24 hours notice and presented with something out of the blue. This is a situation where the Teamsters Union negotiated with the company for approximately 1 month over many things in the effects bargaining agreement, but including specifically the release and the resignation program. And I think that's an important fact in understanding the overall context and removing any sort of element of coercion, duress, fraud, undue pressure. The appellants throughout this period of time...
I think anybody's saying fraud here, but you don't think the union could just have been pushed over by the company? I mean, I'm not sure why the fact that the union is the one who has to concede defeat is any different from the workers.
Well, it is important to recognize that the company had to deal with the union, of course, with respect to the negotiations. They would have been prohibited from approaching the appellants directly under the NLRA. Mm-hmm. With respect to the union, there's no evidence in this record that it was a pushover. They did not perform its statutory role. And, in fact, what's also missing from this record is any allegation that the union did just that.
Give WARN Act notice, you know, in October? This was not a big secret for Deutsche Post or DHL. Give people the 60 days to put their affairs in order, and it would have been so much easier.
I can't speak to or second-guess the company's decision-making at that time, but I will say what they did was compliant with WARN, that they did not trigger WARN, and that in negotiations with the union worked out arrangements so that roughly 500 people did receive benefits that they were otherwise not entitled to.
So it's your position that the way WARN works is that we first subtract from the number of employees anyone who chose to leave voluntarily. Then we're left with a number, and then we ask how many people out of that remaining number were laid off before we can calculate whether that layoff percentage satisfies the statute.
I believe WARN excludes voluntary departures.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is primarily, it seems to me, a mass layoff case, right? Unless you're looking at the individual. There are about five stations in Chicago that are closed down altogether.
I think there was one that was open. There were six ultimately, or there were six altogether to begin with.
You leave O'Hare open, understandably enough, if you were staying in the international business. But you do shut down five locations, and those would be plant closings?
Well, I mean, a term of art, I don't know what we would call them for purposes of WARN. I can tell you that the theory in the case evolved. The theory in the case started with a mass layoff. It morphed into a plant closing in response to our motion for summary judgment. And I think we've dealt with both, whichever prong is being advanced, whether it's plant closing or mass layoff, we've dealt with it such to show that there was no triggering event under Warren.
Did DHL pull out of business in all domestic business or just Chicago?
Domestic.
So was this issue litigated in any other, whether you got a 10-week, whether you got a 4-week, or whether you got Warren Act?
Because I haven't contemplated that question, I will say not that I'm aware of, but I believe the answer is a firm no.
And does the Teamsters Union represent the workers not only in Chicago but in other cities in America where DHL did business?
I don't know the bargaining representatives in the other cities.
Are they unionized?
There are unionized facilities.
But that, as far as you know, that might be location specific.
Correct.
Or at least in this, region-specific.
In this location, for example, there was a group of employees represented by the machinists, I think 701.
That was the 701 crew? Yeah, right. Yeah. Are you arguing that these resignations, because people haven't returned the money they got, have somehow been ratified? I want you to expand a little bit on that. You talk about the fact that before anybody can complain about the programs, they need to tender what they got under the program.
We think that that's a relevant concern or a relevant consideration, rather, when deeming whether these resignations were voluntary. They were presented as voluntary. They were labeled as voluntary. The consideration was paid under those conditions. To now turn around and say that, well, it wasn't voluntary after all, and I'm going to challenge this, whether as a resignation or really that argument would be probably more front aimed at a release argument as opposed to a resignation, that it would be relevant. But still relevant to, I think, our concern that this was a voluntary act on the part of the appellants.
Am I right that the only thing that an employee who refused your program would have wound up with would have been a rather, as I think the union put it, a very hypothetical right of recall that was really only going to materialize for maybe one out of four people, maybe?
I think what they would have been left with was the right of recall, and as came out in prior questioning, the business is fluid. So that they also would have been taking a gamble that they would not be walking away from that job and that it would be possible they would be recalled to something or that there would be something that would change in the company's future.
Yeah, but it was really not too much. I mean, it was like, okay, you can get these 4 weeks of pay or 10 weeks of pay or you're really not going to be working for DHL in all likelihood.
Well, I think with respect to that, as I hear that observation, it doesn't to me go to the question of whether these were voluntary. That question to me it's exploring whether there was actually consideration, and I do think there was consideration. There was something of value. It may not be everything an employee wanted. I understand that, but in this context, a company can only can do what it can do.
But under Warren, they would have gotten 60 days, right?
Had there been a Warren event. And, in fact, the 10-week people out of that one program actually received more than they would have received under Warren.
Yeah, the 10-week people, I agree. I mean, had there been a Warren notice the day they accepted the 10-week program, it actually would have expired sooner than their 10-week. But the 4-week people get quite a bit less. So they, if being laid off was inevitable, the 4-week people actually are winding up with less than they would have under Warren.
Well, with respect to the people that were laid off after the effects bargaining agreement, it's not clear to me because they continued to work up until a certain period of time. So the record wouldn't show it here, but there's an aggregate of what you received under the 4 weeks and that period of time that you worked up until that time of layoff.
Yeah, so I found the record a little hard to follow as to when all these different groups of people actually had their last day of work. Because I think one of the arguments your opponent was making was assuming that it was actually mid-December that the axe fell and they no longer had a job. And your brief gave me the impression, well, no, actually, that no, whatever it was, November 15th or so, voluntary, as you would say, notice under Warn, in fact, wound up giving people 60 days?
Well, no. I think what we were saying with respect to the December time frame is point one. That argument was never presented to the district court below, so that's been waived, and we shouldn't be discussing it. Point two is that if you that argument also depends on the sites all being considered a single site. What's not appealed and what's also been waived is Judge Cannelli's determination that as an undisputed fact and as a matter of law that the sites were not one aggregated site. But if you finally then get to the issue of December, the point that we raised was you calculate 60 days back from that, which is roughly October 25, I think was the date.
Right.
And from that, that's where you pick your denominators and your numbers, and the number, the percentage there drops to 18.6 or 5%.
So to structure your arguments, I mean, I take it everybody agrees, really, that the primary argument is voluntary versus non-voluntary. A secondary point, as I'm understanding you, is that since there's no appeal from Judge Cannelli's decision that there are, as the statute defines it, six different locations, you can't get the numbers to add up on that hypothesis either, because no particular location lost enough people. And then we have all sorts of arguments floating around at the third level about which date you pick and which denominator and who goes and who doesn't go. And
I agree with that structure, and with respect to that third level of the sort of moving target about what date you're picking, likewise, I believe that's been waived. The date that appellants were using below was a date in August, and Judge Cannelli looked at that date back to early June. That's
right,
correct, Your Honor.
Right, right.
And I don't think at appeal is the time for appellants to be changing that calculation and using different standards and different time frames, although, as you say, I think that we fare well without hitting those numbers.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Winston?
With respect to the single site issue, it's true I didn't file an appeal on the single site issue, but what's also true is there's no evidence in the record from DHL about what the layoffs were at the actual sites. I wasn't trying to obtain summary judgment. I'm trying to show that there's disputed facts saying that summary judgment shouldn't be, and it's going to hinge on the characterization of the layoffs, whether they were voluntary or not, whether it's Group A or, what I say, Group A, the 180 that got the 4 weeks, or the people that got the 10 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.